Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 23rd, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Giving, the Gift of Life. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital played host Wednesday to an Impact Life blood drive. We're not in a shortage because of donors giving on a regular basis, said Impact Life's public relations manager, Kirby Wynn. But winter is one of the more challenging times for donations. In terms of blood supply this time of year, we're impacted by cold and flu season, with more donors than usual unable to schedule either due to their own illness or sometimes needing to stay home with children out of school from being sick. After the holidays, we also have some of our regular donors around the region leaving the area for trips to warmer climates. And of course, we're always watching the weather. Wynn said the arrival of snow and ice brings with it potential for canceled blood drives and more missed appointments. To make an appointment at the Decatur Donor Center or a nearby mobile blood drive, donors can call 800-747-5401. Again, that number is 800-747-5401. Or book online at www.bloodcenter.org. That's bloodcenter.org. And then there's a large photo here showing phlebotomist Carl Stambaugh bandages Jim Chumley after his blood donation at the Impact Life Community Blood Drive at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur on Wednesday, January 21st. And Jim Chumley's in the chair, and he's got a big smile on his face because he just finished giving his blood, and the phlebotomist is also smiling. And a smaller photo shows Lindsay Parody at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital inpatient nurse manager donates valuable O-positive blood during the Impact Life Community Blood Drive at the hospital in Decatur on Wednesday, January 21st. It's great to see that we have staff come in to help support. They're the ones that are being the caregivers, and then they come in and donate and help save a life on top of that. It's always great to see, said Chad Sabin, an Impact Life Community Development Advocate. And we see Miss Parody sitting in the chair, the kind of lounge-type chair, with her giving her blood for donation. Also on the front page, locally, local government, Logan County drafting rules for data center. This is from Lincoln. Proposed Logan County zoning changes that would accommodate the construction of a controversial data center were offered to the public for comment Wednesday. Roughly 50 members of the public attended the special hearing of the county's Zoning and Economic Development Committee. While the companies planning the project pointed to economic benefits from taxes and new local jobs and limited demand for local water, public comments largely were against it. People also were invited to suggest revisions to the ordinance to provide greater accountability and protection. In December, representatives of Hut 8, a Miami-based digital infrastructure provider, presented a proposal for a 500-megawatt data center on 200 acres in the Latham area. Hut 8 officials said they estimate bringing 1,775 jobs to the county, 75 temporary pre-construction jobs at $130 an hour, 1,500 temporary jobs during the construction phase at $80 an hour, and 200 full-time operations jobs at $60 an hour. Peter Gohausen, Director of Energy or Origination for Hut 8, said in an email that the $60 an hour figure includes wages, benefits, and taxes. company is looking for a large percentage of local hires by engaging with Lincoln Economic Advancement and Development, Inc., and the Greater Peoria Economic Development Council to reach out to both general and subcontractors within the region, he added. It is also coordinating with Normal-based Heartland Community College, which has a branch campus in Lincoln, about a joint reskilling program for students to become data center operations professionals. Because Logan County's zoning ordinance doesn't contain specific regulations for data centers, the committee relied on Sangamon County's regulations as a starting point to draft its own policy on allowing them as a special use in agricultural districts. That draft was presented at Wednesday's hearing. Logan County Board Member Michael DeRoss, who chairs the Zoning and Economic Development Committee, welcomed audience suggestions but advised attendees not to be too specific with their recommendations because it will make the ordinance much harder to revise. There is a method to the madness of a little vagueness, DeRoss said. One of the biggest concerns addressed by the public is the county's authority to regulate data centers since the passage of the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act has mostly removed local government's authority to reject renewable energy and battery storage sites. The Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act, which was signed into law in January, allows the Illinois Commerce Commission to issue siting certificates to compliant wind, solar, or storage projects that may have been denied at the local level. This takes effect in June. Although data centers are exempt from the law as it currently reads, members of the public were concerned that these projects could be added to the law in the future, which could eliminate the county and its residents' ability to say no. In regard to transparency, DeRoss recommended that county officials, in addition to elected officials and paid staff of municipalities, cannot sign non-disclosure agreements for data center projects. Although committee members suggested a narrower time frame for approval of the zoning changes, opponents of the project insisted that public notice be given at least 60 days in advance of a vote or recommendation on approval of the project. The draft ordinance also sets penalties for violations of its provisions. First, violations of any provision is punishable by a civil penalty of no more than $25,000 for the first offense, $50,000 for the second offense, and $100,000 for the third and subsequent offenses. DeRoss said there is currently no maximum penalty. Therefore, audience members wanted the first fine to be much higher to set an example for company establishing a multi-billion-dollar project in Logan County. However, DeRoss added that the ordinance requires legal review to make sure any costs are within reason. Data center projects often are controversial because of the amount of water they use, but HUD 8 officials say their usage would not be high. Construction of the center would only require water to supply the bathrooms, which are estimated to run at less than 9,000 gallons per day, according to a presentation from HUT 8. The 9,000 gallons per day is a conservative planning and design allowance used while the site plan and detailed plumbing and wastewater engineering are still being finalized, Gohausen said. Under normal operating conditions, we expect actual water use to be lower. This is due to the implementation of a closed-loop cooling system, which uses a fixed volume of coolant to absorb server heat. The coolant then travels to an outside radiator to cool down before returning to the servers and starting the recycling process again. An open-loop cooling system, in comparison, relies on a natural water source to absorb server heat. The system is estimated to lose about 2 billion gallons of water annually to evaporation, Hut 8 said. Gohausen said in an email response to questions from DeRoss that closed-loop systems are the industry standards for data centers. Of this scale. However, audience members called for further transparency on the volume of coolant that would be discharged from the data center. DeRoss said the revised ordinance must also come before the county's Planning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals before returning to the Zoning and Economic Development Committee for a recommendation to the county board. Each meeting will have a public comment period for residents to weigh in on the ordinance. For questions related to the data center project, email datacenter@logancountyil.gov. Again, that's one word, datacenter@logancountyil.gov, or logancountydatacenter@hut8.com. logancountydatacenter@hut8.com. And there's a photo here on page A2 of the Logan County Zoning and Economic Development Committee discuss an ordinance allowing data centers as a special use in agricultural districts during a hearing on Wednesday, January 21st, 2026, at the Logan County Courthouse in Lincoln. And several people are sitting at tables behind the railing toward the judge's bench in the Logan County Courthouse. There's a nice mural behind the judge's bench. Looks like a pretty courtroom. In local and national news on page A3, Deb's Catering Cooking at Lakeland College. This is from Effingham. An October 19th fire that damaged Deb's Catering Altamont building left this 37-year-old business without a commercial kitchen for serving its clients. That need was soon met by Lakeland College, where the Board of Trustees approved a temporary lease on November 10th for Deb's to use the commercial kitchen at the new Effingham Technology Center to prepare meals for nonprofit clients, such as Head Start and Meals on Wheels. Catering service co-owner Alvin Schultz said they subsequently started utilizing this facility on November 12th to meet delivery requests in Effingham, Christian, Clay, and Fayette counties. They are so good to us. Anything we have needed, they have done, Schultz said of Lakeland. They are the best landlords, he said. The lease stipulates that the kitchen will be used for the limited purpose of preparing approximately 720 meals per day for Meals on Wheels and Head Start, as well as an additional 200 meals per day for food services provided to local daycare centers. Lakeland reported that in response to the Altamont fire, the college worked to evaluate the opportunity for a community partnership to help Deb's and ensure residents throughout the East Central Illinois region continue to receive these essential meals without interruption. College President Josh Bullock said in a news release that Lakeland is the community's college and they are dedicated to engaging with the community in meaningful ways. We are thankful that the resources available at the Effingham Technology Center have put us in the position to meet this crucial need and provide vital support to a local family-oriented business that is committed to serving others, Bullock said. The commercial kitchen was created years ago by the building's previous owner, Patterson Companies. Lakeland acquired this 100,000 square foot facility along Interstate 57 in 2023 and began renovating it for academic use. This center opened at the beginning of the fall of 2025 semester. Schultz marveled at the modern commercial kitchen already being ready for use at the Effingham Technology Center and thanked Lakeland Police Sergeant Jeffrey Succo, who is part of this building security staff, for helping suggest the idea. Debs has remained busy since the fire, because Head Start and Meals on Wheels programs in its area have not been disrupted by federal budget issues, Schultz said. He added that the catering service may be able to return to its home building in coming months as repairs are completed. Schultz's daughter, Tiffany Wasson, who operates the Giving Plate charitable meal program, said in a news release, "A fire may have changed their kitchen, but it hasn't changed their heart." We're thankful for this temporary space that keeps us moving forward and for every person who stood beside us through it all. The journey continues, and we're cooking with even more gratitude than before, Wasson said. And the photo here that accompanies the article shows Deb's catering Steve Schultz, son of the owners, loads freshly packed pork roast meals into insulated delivery bags on January 9th in the commercial kitchen at Lakeland College's Effingham Technology Center. And it's a big room, a big kitchen, with many spaces for preparing food. And Mr. Smith is in, or Schultz, excuse me, is in the center loading in insulated bags. And then a larger picture shows Deb's catering co-owner, Alvin Schultz, loading freshly packaged containers of pork roast meals onto a rolling rack on January 9th in the commercial kitchen at Lakeland College's Effingham Technology Center. And these are racks where trays fit in, and there's people working in the background at this well-lit commercial kitchen. Teen accused of murder appears in adult court. Well, wearing a sweatshirt emblazoned with the message, "Smile on your worst days," Decatur police say teenager Jerem L. Perry killed a 15-year-old boy in a burst of gunfire. Perry, now 16, charged with 6 counts of murder in the October 24th death of Tavon Beasley. Perry was 15 at the time, but he's being tried in adult court. He made his first appearance Wednesday. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Lindsay Shelton arraigned Perry on 6 alternate murder counts and 1 count of aggravated discharge of a firearm. The judge told the defendant he was too dangerous to be let out of custody and denied him pre-trial release. According to sworn affidavits filed in the Decatur Police Department, Perry targeted and shot Beasley multiple times while he stood in the doorway of a store in the 100 block of East Wood Street. Detectives pulled surveillance footage from the store, which they said clearly showed the gunman wearing a bright orange sweatshirt with white lettering perched in the rear window of a car leaving the liquor store at lot and opening fire. Officer Lucas Bray, who signed the affidavit, said police tapped into the Flock license plate reading camera system and traced the vehicle. Nehemiah T. Myers, 18, is accused of driving the vehicle. He was arrested the night of the killing, and Perry was tracked down and arrested November 26th. According to the affidavits, Myers told police earlier in the night he had seen people in the store he believed to be armed and he wanted to drive away before any trouble went down. He subsequently began to drive out of the parking lot when he heard the sound of gunfire and believed him or his vehicle was being shot at, or that he and his vehicle were being shot at, according to another sworn affidavit about the case. Nehemiah maintained that he was unaware that Derheim, or anyone else in his vehicle was armed prior to this shooting, and that he, Nehemiah, was not aware this shooting was going to happen prior to it occurring. Perry remains held in juvenile custody because of his age and will be brought back to court February 4th for a preliminary hearing when he will enter the plea to the charges against him. Myers has pleaded not guilty to the same list of charges as Perry and remains in the custody of the Macon County Jail. He's due back in court for a pretrial hearing March 5th. also on this page, cold weather advisory issued from Lincoln. The last of normal January temperatures has ended for the next few days. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a cold weather advisory beginning at 3 a.m. Friday until noon Saturday for most of central Illinois. Wind chills as low as minus 10 to minus 25 are expected, according to the meteorologists. The dangerously cold wind chills, as low as 25 below zero, could cause frostbite on exposed skin in as little as 30 minutes, the Weather Service warned. Use caution while traveling outside. Wear appropriate clothing, a hat, and gloves. The hazardous temperature conditions are expected to continue throughout the weekend, along with the bitterly cold conditions, which are expected through Tuesday. A 60% chance of snow would accumulate more than 2 inches. And here are a list of warming centers. The Macon County Emergency Management Agency provided this list of local warming centers available to those seeking shelter from winter's extreme weather. The Decatur Public Library at 130 North Franklin Street, Decatur, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza, Decatur, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Oasis Day Center, 243 West Cerro Gordo Street, Decatur, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily, closed from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Blue Mound Village Hall at 309 North Railroad Avenue, Blue Mound, 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Forsyth Public Library, 268 South Elwood Street, Forsyth, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday and Friday, and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. Harristown Community Center, 185 North Kembark Street, Decatur, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Macon City Hall, 10539 South Woodcock Road, Macon, 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, closed from 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. Moroa City Hall, 120 South Locust Street, Moroa, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, closed at noon to 1 p.m. Mount Zion Convention Center, 1400 Mount Zion Parkway, Mount Zion, 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Warrensburg Village Hall, 155 Main Street, Warrensburg, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. They do not list after-hours places or overnight places here. And here's a national story related to this. This is from Atlanta, Associated Press. Much of U.S. preparing for huge winter storm. Bread was flying off the shelves, salt was being loaded into trucks, and utility workers were nervously watching forecast Thursday as a huge winter storm that could bring catastrophic damage, widespread power outages, and bitterly cold weather was barreling toward the eastern two-thirds of the U.S. The massive storm system is expected to bring a crippling ice storm from Texas through parts of the South, potentially around a foot of snow from Oklahoma through Washington, D.C., New York, and Boston, and then a final punch of bitterly cold air that could drop wind chills to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit in parts of Minnesota and North Dakota. Forecasters are warning the damage, especially in areas that get a large amount of ice, could rival a hurricane. About 140 million people were under winter storm or cold weather watches or warnings, and in many places, both. The storm was expected to begin today in New Mexico and Texas, and then the worst of the weather will move east into the deep South before heading up the coast and thumping New England with snow. A cold punch coming after means it will take a while to thaw out, an especially dangerous prospect in places where ice and snow weigh down tree branches and power lines and cut electricity, perhaps for days, roads and sidewalks could remain icy as well into next week. Freezing temperatures are expected all the way from Florida, and lows in the north and Midwest will get about as cold as possible, even down to minus 25 or 30 degrees Fahrenheit, forecasters said. Winter storms can be notoriously tricky to forecast. 1 or 2 degrees could mean the difference between a catastrophe or a cold rain. And forecasters said that the places with the worst weather can't be pinned down until the event starts. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp declared a state of emergency in his state, like many other governors, while acknowledging Thursday morning some forecasts have disastrous levels of wintry weather in Atlanta, while others have the Deep South's largest city mostly spared. That line could move north or south depending on what the temperatures do, and that could throw at us, Kemp said. Kemp said being prepared no matter what means that where the line ends up won't matter much. Go ahead and fill your cars up. Make sure you've got the things that you need at your house to stay warm and hunker down in case you lose power for a day or two, the governor said. All 275 of ice melting salt sold out at Bates Ace Hardware in Atlanta in one morning, manager Lewis Payne said. He made special trips to the warehouse to restock it, but it's selling out everywhere. Wendy Chambers stopped by the store to pick up batteries and flashlights in case there's a power outage. We're going to be prepared, aren't we? We're going to be able to read, to do things, play games, she said before heading to a church choir with her granddaughter. Brian Trump's trucks were already treating roads from Oklahoma to Tennessee, with more states expected to begin treating roads at the start of the storm as the start of the storm gets closer. College sports teams move up or postpone games, and the Texas Rangers canceled their annual Fan Fest event. The city of Carmel, Indiana, canceled its winter games out of fear residents could get frostbite and hypothermia competing in the ice trike relay and human curling, in which people slide down a skating rink on inner tubes. Today in history, on this date in 1368, China's Ming Dynasty, which lasted nearly three centuries, began as Zhu Wan Zhang was formally acclaimed Hongwu Emperor, following the collapse of the Yuan Dynasty. In 1789, Georgetown University was established in present-day Washington, D.C. In 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell became the first woman to receive a medical degree in the U.S. In 1870, approximately 200 Piegan Blackfoot tribe members were killed by U.S. Army troops in what became known as the Baker Massacre. In 1964, the 24th Amendment to the United States Constitution to the United States was ratified, prohibiting poll taxes in federal elections. In 1973, Richard Nixon announced an accord had been reached to end the Vietnam War and would be formally signed 4 days later in Paris. In 1986, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted its first two members, including Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and Elvis Presley. In 1997, Madeleine Albright was sworn in as the United States' first female Secretary of State. And in 2002, Wall Street Journal began, reporter Daniel Pearl was kidnapped by extremists in Pakistan while researching Islamic militant groups, leading to the beheading of the American journalist weeks later in captivity. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 23rd, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.